Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the longest running Bigfoot podcast on Blog Talk Radio. The original Squatch Detective Radio, featuring your hosts, Steve Coles and Chris Bennett. 3 decades of Bigfoot research, 2 decades of Bigfoot radio. Here we go.
911, what are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
And then this thing walks across the road, takes a turn towards us, and then leaps over a guardrail.
All I can remember is flipping the light on, and I see this creature, and I knew in my heart, I knew in my mind, in the whole night, this isn't a man.
And the whole time, the whole thing was shadowing us, right behind us, right on the side of us. You could kind of see the thing moving through the woods.
There are thousands of perfect people whose word would be good on any other subject who describe getting a good look at an enormous hair-covered upright animal, and that is a fact.
And good evening, cyberspace. Welcome to Squatch Detective Radio for today's date, December 2nd, 2018. I am your host, your guide, the Squatch Detective Steve Coles, along with my good friend and co-host, Mr. Chris Bennett. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Steve. How you doing today, bud?
Yeah, we're doing pretty dang good.
Oh, man, we have really been enjoying some warm weather here in Kentucky. I hope you guys have got some up there in New York here the last few days, because we have had like 60-degree highs and stuff, and here it is now December. And,
well,
you know, if this is global warming, you know, that's fine with me. I love it.
Well, not quite. You know, it's a nice 36 degrees here, but at least it isn't freezing. We had a little bit of a cold snap, and we're still getting hit with some Canadian air. But it rained today, which took away a lot of the snow, and I believe it's supposed to get a little warmer tomorrow as well. So I think we're looking at a high in the 40s tomorrow, which is, I'll take it. For December, I'll take it in New York.
That'll work.
I didn't open the chat room. Oops.
Well, you know, I was getting ready to say something about, I don't see the chat. I don't think I'm in chat, but I've been trying to get this thing working. I don't have
there
a button. I can open it up. You got a button?
For those
for
those listening, the chat room is now open, and my apologies for that. It's been a little bit of a busy evening. Sometimes that does happen. You know, you get tied up with a little work today, and usually I run around till about 6 o'clock in the evening, and what happened was I'm just adjusting the board here so I can get everything in line and in tune. There we go. And what happens is sometimes you know you have a late dinner and you're scrambling to put a show together, and there you have it. So you forget something.
I was just finishing my last mouthful of supper when I called in, bud. You're not the only one running behind schedule today, but hey, we got the chat room open now. There you are. There I am. Okay. Everybody want to come on in? Come on in.
Come on in. Chat room is open, boys and girls. And, what an interesting week it has been in the news. Obviously, we have the death of a president this week. That was a very sad thing. You know, he was a very modest, humble guy, and some of the stuff you'll learn about kind of after the fact really was surprising. You know, I didn't realize that he got shot, that George H.W. Bush got shot down in World War II, and he got rescued by a submarine, and he was the youngest combat pilot ever at the time.
Wow,
and
cool.
He flew 58 missions, and it was like, wow, this is really some surprising stuff. So
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew he was a pilot in World War II, but I didn't know he got shot down. Now, that's interesting. I'll have to check this out.
Yep. Well, you know, Chris, I used to work in a bakery as a pilot.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you used to take the bread in one quarter, and pile it in the other.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Ah, time for a bad joke. You can all write in and tell me how you hated the joke, folks. That's all good.
Well, I mean, you know, I was in the, I did a tour of duty in the Air Force, and that was one thing they told us before I went into basic training. They said never, if they ask if are there any volunteers for pilots, they said do not volunteer for that.
That's right.
And
remember,
I was just going to say that they would tell you to dig a hole and put the dirt in the wheelbarrow, and then pile it over there, and then you fill in the hole.
Pile it.
Oh, terrible! Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I didn't like that job in the bakery anyway. I got sick of the dough.
Yeah.
That was even a worse one. I'm sorry. But anyway, yes, very, very sad news, the passing. But, you know, in a way, the guy lived a very long life. He was in his 90s, and it's kind of a sad thing, you know. But there's a lot of other cool stuff that we learned about, you know. Like, for example, the one thing that really amazed me was a lot of people didn't realize that when we were funding the El Salvadoran rebels, they were getting a little gnarly with, they were starting to kill a little bit indiscriminately, and Reagan didn't like that. So he actually sent Bush, the vice president, on a covert mission with two Secret Service agents and a Black Hawk helicopter and a Marine by the name of Oliver North, down into the jungles of El Salvador, and actually tell them to knock it off, or they're going to lose funding. And he told them that very curtly, and he turned around, he walked out, and went right back on the helicopter, and they stopped. But that just goes to show. I mean, the guy was the vice president, and he was still flying missions for the United States.
Right.
So that was
all that stuff. They kept all that stuff, you know, very hush-hush, very secretive. Mm-hmm. While Reagan was president, and, of course, Bush was his vice president, that's the time when I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed in a temporary duty assignment, down south, around about that area. And we had an incident that happened that I never even heard anything about. And didn't know who it was, what they did, or anything until just a few years ago. They kept all that stuff, but with the Sandinistas and all that stuff was kept private, really quiet.
Yep.
Except for the Oliver North deal, those parts came out.
Well, the whole Iran deal, that whole.
Yeah, we were doing a lot of stuff down there, and they really kept it hush hush for a long time.
Yep. Well, there was a lot of stuff going on, and it was a very tricky world when communism had its you know, anchors into a lot of different countries. You know, and it's kind of funny because, you know, even today's model, I mean, Russia is not a communist country. It's more of a, even though it's a quote-unquote democracy, it's more of a dictatorship now.
Right.
But
yeah,
but it's what it is. And this is not a political show, so we can get off that topic real quick.
Yeah. We're not going to fool politics, man.
But I gotta say this. You know, we're going to have a very interesting discussion tonight on the topic of Bigfoot research and other things as well. But we do have a very sad note to put out today. And although, you know, to many, I did not necessarily agree with his theories and his philosophies on the Patterson-Gimlin film, but Leroy Blevins Sr. Passed away just yesterday. He had written a number of books on the JFK assassination, which if you watch some of his YouTube videos on the JFK assassination, they're pretty fascinating stuff. The sad thing about it, his last video was posted less than a month ago. So,
yeah.
And he was even telling people he was, you know, I remember watching this one video. He said, well, and I just caught up on him today,
But, yeah, back in September, he said he had pneumonia, and then it turned out he had lung cancer. And it took him really way too quick. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he was an okay guy. Even though we may not have agreed, and you got to understand, do you notice how many Democrats are coming out and saying what a great guy George Bush was, and Obama's giving him tributes and Clinton's giving him tributes and stuff like that? Well, you got to understand, you know, politics is politics. And the way I see it is, you know, the Bigfoot community is strewn with a bunch of different politics. And there's no reason not to be civil to one another. We see what the political situation is today. And for the longest time, it's been that way in the Bigfoot community. Now, I got to say, recently it's starting to kind of temper down a bit. I see a lot less animosity than I did, say, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Yeah. But, you know, I would say this. Leroy and I did not agree politically, but the man was a good-hearted soul, I believe. I actually had the opportunity a couple of years ago. I was at Scarefest. It was Scarefest 2017. And this gentleman came up to me, and he introduced himself. It was Leroy Blevins. And he said, "I have something for you." And he handed me a copy of his book on the Patterson-Gimlin film. And it's called Patterson and Gimlin, Bigfoot Film 1967. And I'm not really – a lot of his summations I feel are incorrect. A lot of his science is incorrect. Some of the comparisons I see do not match up. I think that he wanted to believe he was onto something and didn't get onto something. But that's neither here nor there. The thing is, the man gave me a copy of his book, signed it, put my name in it, signed it, gave it to me. Didn't ask nothing for it. Of course, I gave him a copy of What Would Sasquatch Do? Because because kindness begets kindness always. And so it was
very interesting. That's the thing about books, though, Steve. I mean, when you're reading an author's book, you're really reading his opinion and the way he feels, or him or her, the way they feel about whatever subject they're writing on. And,
absolutely.
You know, a lot of people, they make the mistake of thinking that if this is in the book or in a book, it's correct. Well, no, it doesn't work that way.
No.
That's just the author's interpretation of how they feel about it. But
I
also noticed
this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I will say this. Some of the historical stuff and photos that are in this book, Leroy did an awesome job. He's got a lot of the original newspaper articles. He's got a lot of different photos that made a lot of sense as far as where they are fall chronologically. So it gives you a very good history of the timeline and stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of cool, and I appreciated that part of the book. So it's a good reference for a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. And refresh my memory here. Is it Leroy Blevins Sr. or Jr., the one that built the Patty costume or tried to build the Patty costume? Which one do you remember?
No, that was Philip Morris. He was the
Right, but now I'm not saying that that they built the one for Patterson Gimlin.
Right.
They tried to make a copy of it. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah,
recreate. That is correct. He did. Right. He was the one who created this suit. And, you know, I don't want to get necessarily into the minutiae of the book or argue the book.
Today is
a day to say, you know, is to look at his passing as, you know, something that's sad, you know. Because, you know, and like I said, his JFK work is very interesting, and that's always been a topic, you know, that's interested me is the whole JFK topic, the assassination and stuff like that. That's always been a fascinating, I mean, by trade, and this is kind of part of the go on about tonight a little bit is, you know, what makes a person get into Bigfoot research? You know, some people we know it's experiences. to me, I've always been an investigator. I always liked a good mystery. And what more can be fun than getting into that mystery? And it just so happened that, you know, to me, the mystery of Sasquatch literally is something you can feel and grasp and touch and find physical evidence. UFOs are cool, but there's a lot of, there's really not much you can do. It's like, okay, I'm going to look up in the sky tonight, and, you know, what do you do? You know, the only thing you can do is, okay, they saw one yesterday. Let me see, you know. So it's really tough to get a handle on that. You know, ghost hunting was always fun to do, and I still I do that, as you know. But the Sasquatch has always been my first love, and I don't know what it was.
Yeah, we got some kind of noise coming in there, Steve. I don't know. You think you might need to change your battery or?
No, we're good. I'm not getting that noise.
Okay. Well, it must just be on my end then. Okay. Maybe I need to change mine.
What kind of noise are you getting?
It just sounded like a bee or something other than it quit.
Well, you got to run outside and knock that squirrel off that telephone line.
That's probably what it is. He's probably out there trying to pull a walnut off of the telephone pole. But now, I hate to hear about Leroy Blevins passing, man. That's bad. But, you know, we all got to go. When you got to go, you got to go. But I hate to hear about President Bush passing, you know. H.W., he was a good one.
He certainly, you know, I mean, if you look, I mean, it's just time is short on this planet, man. And that kind of sums up a lot today. And, you know, I was out of town for work, and I had woken up to seeing this about the president. And then I get up this morning, and then I see Leroy passed last night. And I was like, wow. You know, when you see mortality like that, people you know, I mean, of course, I'm still taking J.C. Johnson's loss, you know, his passing. You know, that, I mean, it's been almost a year now, but it was, I believe, March of this year he passed away. And, you know, man, you know, I miss the conversations I've had with this. And, again, I may not have agreed with everything he would talk about or state, but the man truly believed what he talked about, as I do believe that Leroy did too. No matter how wrong they can be, that's my opinion, of course. So we have to left. And my only regret in life is not spending more time with those kind of folks or talking more with those folks. And you look at it, last week or a couple of weeks ago when we were on, we did a show where we played audio clips from people like John Green and Eric Bechert, even though he was batshit crazy. we played, you know, we played clips, and these are voices in the past now. We even played a clip, and a funny clip, when we introduced JC as the hang on a second. I just got something. You know, of course, what was the clip when we introduced him? I'll play that clip again because that's always fun to listen to.
It's the hard-drinking, foul-mouthed, lecherous adventure man.
Ah, thank you very much. I'll let you give your own title. Welcome, JC. Good to hear from you, my brother.
Always a pleasure to be here. Always.
And, you know, when you get a voice like that out of the past. And that was something, hey, can you introduce me as this? It was kind of funny. And the man had a great sense of humor. But anyway, I digress. So, the reason why I love a good mystery. So I got into this Sasquatch mystery back in 1998 when I read a book called Monsters of the Northwoods.
Yeah,
and it was written by several authors, Paul Bartholomew, Bob Bartholomew, Bruce Hallenbach, and Bill Brand. And
yeah.
little did I know that three out of the four of them that I would get to know. In fact, three of the four of them have been on this very radio show over the years. And, and for the longest time, Bill Bram was my mentor, and I learned so much from him, and it was, you know, really, really fun. It was really fun working with him at times. And, you know, as time goes on, everybody has growing pains and people move on. And, you know, but I still talk to Bill a few times a year, which is cool. And, you know, it's, you know, and to know Paul Bartholomew very well also. I mean, these guys know the history intrinsically because they were actually there. And a lot of times we have a lot of new researchers out there and they look, you know, and I'm not knocking people, but if you really want to get to the bottom of a topic or learn about a topic, you need to talk to the old timers first. You need to see, you know, what ground has been covered, what's real, what's not real, what's, you know, fact versus fiction. And you know that's not being done nowadays, and that's why we have this constant rehashing of old photos and old videos, and, you know, hey, I just came across this picture, what do y'all think? Well, if you just,
right,
you know, and not to,
well,
say that's,
know,
not
that's
necessarily
a, it, yeah, it's kind of understandable for somebody that's just getting into Bigfooting, you know, that's fine, because everybody's, you know, there's a learning curve there, and everybody's got to assimilate a lot of information. But one thing that really aggravates me, and I don't think there's any excuse for, is when somebody, a reporter or somebody, does a story on Bigfoot or does a story on something like the Patterson-Gimlin film, and then they comment on there, like, I've read several articles before, talk about the Patterson-Gimlin film, and it said, oh, yeah, of course that was, you know, found out to be a hoax. And or proven to be a hoax. And, no, yeah, it's never been proven to be a hoax. But they just put it out there just like it's common knowledge. And no, it's not.
Exactly. Correct. And then there was the time, and I've talked about this too. You know, there was a time when ABC.com screwed up a story about, you know, the Gimlin film, mixing it up with the Ray Wallace thing. And I remember calling them out, and they never corrected it. Never. Even though I pointed out.
Nah.
You have your story wrong, and they refuse to even acknowledge it, really, other than the fact that, we'll check it. You know, and again, nothing ever happens. You know,
that's something. They spread a lot of misinformation, and I don't like that. You know, it should be, if you read an article, it should be informative and not misinformation.
And I got to say this. I apologize. I haven't blogged in a long time. It's actually been since May since I've blogged. And normally that's not my thing. And but now they're putting banner ads on my blog, I noticed. That's right across the front of my blog, which is kind of bullshitty. But on the fifth of this year, I write an article that caught my attention, and once again, a journalist makes a completely false statement. Some cryptids, and this is the actual quote written by this guy, Richard Worth. Of course, I call it Richard Worthless. It says some cryptids have seared into our minds and become pop culture icons. Bigfoot, the American super celebrity of the ape man family. Well, number one, nobody's ever said Bigfoot's an ape man. Was made famous by the Patterson-Gimlin film, the grainy minute-long film of Bigfoot walking through a clearing while rolling his shoulder to look at his audiences. And then he talks about the surgeon photo, which is in Loch Ness. And he says, of course, both of these visual proofs have been proven to hoaxes. What?
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
really.
The surgeon photo was a hoax. Came out years after it happened. But prior to that, no. I quote an Undebunking Bigfoot talking about Hieronymus, Bob Hieronymus. Hieronymus claims he was friends with Roger Patterson and accompanied Patterson and Gilman to NorCal with his costume. Patterson's widow says he's lying. Bob Gilman says he's lying. No one can corroborate Hieronymus' claim that he accompanied Patterson and Gilman. Various living witnesses near Bluff Creek say Patterson and Gilman were not accompanied by anyone. No one ever saw Hieronymus with these two. Hieronymus doesn't know where they went exactly or which route they took. There are statements from people around Yakima who recall Hieronymus having some kind of furry costume in his trunk during that period. You remember his claims that he would try to fool some people with it. So there may have been a costume in his possession in the mid-60s, but he didn't hang on to it, nor did anyone take a photo of him wearing it. And, that was a quote I put in that particular blog. And then I said, if you're going to call something, and what I write is Mr. Wirth does bring up some of the usual points about pseudoscience, et cetera, which every skeptic loves to bring up. However, Mr. Wirth's basic knowledge of a topic he mentioned to the PG film, his facts are incorrect when he calls Patty a he. If you're going to call something a hoax, Mr. Wirth, at least better have his facts straight about the claims and show real journalism, not wave an accusatory statement that something is a hoax without at least doing the minimal homework required.
Right.
Furthermore, why is Wirth calling a Sasquatch a member of the ape family? Is this some of his own conjecture? You know, we know it's from the order of primate, but we have no clue as if it was pongid, ape, or hominid, or even if it's his own special branch off. Now, if people want to debate the authenticity of the film, that's fair. People can have their own opinions, but no suit, no receipts, no proof. Everything else is mere conjecture, including Mr. Wirth's flippant claim. And that was my post on that one.
That was a good blog, and I really that's one of the things that really upsets me. That blog discussed one of the topics that upsets me about the reporters that print an article with a complete falsehood to it. If they wrote down it's my opinion that this is a hoax, okay, I'll buy that. That's fine. I'll agree. Okay, that's great. In your opinion, that's a hoax, but it's not been proven to be a hoax. No,
no, absolutely.
But
there was another article that was written by a scientist that I took and see, this is more of a debate type of thing, and I did a blog on it as well using a point counterpoint, and his name was Dr. Darren Naish. Dr. Naish is a paleontologist, which means he looks at dinosaurs and such.
Yeah.
But what he's one of the statements, and let me bring up a couple of these statements, see if these ring true or what your thoughts on it. This is what Dr. Naish had said. I do not think the data we have at the moment, this includes tracks, hairs, vocalizations, photos, and the innumerable eyewitness accounts, provide support for the notion that Bigfoot is real, and have come to the conclusion that it is a sociocultural phenomenon that people are seeing all manner of different things, combining it with ideas, memes, and preconceptions they hold in their minds, and interpreting them as encounters with a monstrous human-like biped. Fair statement. Very fair statement. My counterpoint to that was I agree. The data at the moment does not provide scientific support. However, the sheer number of eyewitness reports defies that. The old adage of preconceptions does not hold water to the folks who have encounters that do not in one iota believe in the existence of such a creature until they have a sighting.
Right.
Some are left traumatized and haunted by what they have seen because it defies their belief system. And while this blanket statement may hold true for some, it is not applicable to all. The article later goes on to state that a longtime Sasquatch researcher, Rennie DeHinden, never found tracks or had a sighting, can lend credence that Nash's statement is an error. Certainly, DeHinden had a preconceived notion, as did Green and Byrne, yet none of those veteran researchers had laid eyes on a creature. So what are your thoughts? What do you think of that?
Well, you know, just because these things are out there doesn't mean that you're going to see one first time you step in the woods either, you know. And that's something that's really, you know, why don't more people see them? Well, I mean, they're pretty good at hiding. And just because a researcher has dedicated their life to the pursuit and the study, rather, maybe even a lot of those guys probably don't spend that much time in the woods. And so, you know, I wouldn't hold that against them because, you know, before I got sick, I'd spent a lot of time in the woods. And, you know, we're talking, I hadn't had a really good sighting since 2010. And so, you know, I was out in the woods several years after that. And so, you know, I think these things are harder to locate than people realize.
Yep.
But
Now
it doesn't really matter when the PhDs start talking, discounting the existence, and they start giving their reason
opinion.
Why. I mean, their opinion. I've watched one show, and I can't remember. There's been so many. It was a Bigfoot show. I don't remember if it was Monster Quest or one of the other Bigfoot shows. Over the years, you know how many there's been. But on one of them, there was a lady, PhD, and she gave her opinion that there was not enough food, substance for a Sasquatch to survive, a large primate to survive in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
And so, as soon as she said that, I was like, oh, so we don't have any bears there, right?
and a black bear before hibernation needs 21,000 calories a day before hibernation.
Yeah.
You know, and Dr. Philip Stevens in my Monster Quest episode, I've said this before, stated that there's no evidence to support that a large primate can survive in North America. Well, what are we? We're large primates.
Right.
And there were Aboriginal peoples that survived here long before we had modern conveniences and the internet and iPhones and microwave oven. So there was another statement too. There's a few statements. I want to cover this. It's pretty good stuff. There was one statement. He says, while writing this article and others, is that there's scarcely any Bigfoot imagery online which is marked for reuse. Everything is protected by copyright and unavailable for free use by others. Make of that what you will. And my counterpoint to that is, well, we are in the internet age. Everything in places is subject to copyright. There are pictures of all sorts of animals on the internet that are copyright. Does that mean they're faked or not real? I mean, you can look and you can find chimpanzees that are copyrighted, pictures of gorillas that are copyrighted. Most of your stuff is copyrighted. So, you know, now he's just looking to grasp at straws to, you know, pick at his argument.
Well, see, that's the thing. You know, I mean, you got to look at it from the taker's point of view, the artist or who are the copyright holder, whoever made the picture or photo, whatever it is. You know, I mean, is it really fair to them if you take their images and you put them on a TV special or something, that's something that you're going to make quite a bit of money off of, and use their information, you know, and their materials for free? You know, I don't think that's really that fair.
Well, I'll give you a great example. There was a gentleman on the West Coast who bases himself in the San Francisco Bay Area, who, you know, may or may not have been involved in a freezer incident 10 years ago, that got involved with some production company making a docudrama-type film. It was a fiction film, and he was going to be the star. And I was watching the trailer of it one day, And they actually used a picture of the Vermont trail cam photo on it. You know, as like all this evidence. So they were grabbing people's stuff without even asking them.
Right.
You know, I checked with Frank, and I wrote to the people who made the trailer, and shortly thereafter that trailer was pulled.
Yeah.
But you know, because in no way did Frank want to be associated with said gentleman on the West Coast.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, that's why Dr. Naish, stuff like that gets copyrighted.
Yeah.
You know, now, but you know what, Mr. Dr. Naish? You could have used any of those if you had been a little up on internet law. You can use any of those if you're using it to write an educational article and using it for reference. Fair use.
Sure.
You know,
that's right.
But fair use. But, you know, but as far as people like the Star magazine or the Inquirer or the Weekly World News, where Hillary Clinton's cabinet minister, you know, she was planning on appoint, if she got elected, she was planning on appointing Bigfoot as Secretary of State. you know, that I shit you not, folks, pardon my French, but I believe I saw that as a headline once. But anyway, so Dr. Naish goes on to write, Bigfoots purportedly make noises, and a standard part of modern Bigfoot lore is that people might be able to call in or even communicate with Bigfoots by making wail, screams, roars, or howls, or by hitting trees or rocks to make far-crying percussive whacks. These sounds resembling the noises that are attributed to the creature. What's notable is that these vocalizations are phenomenally diverse. The Ohio howls, samurai chatter, the whoops, whistles, growls, and howls attributed to this animal well exceed what we expect for a single animal species that communicates over long distances. And there's nothing approaching homogeneity of the sort present across known primate species. The conclusion must be that the noises have diverse origins, by which I mean that they are mostly sounds made by known animal species, including cattle, coyotes, and their hybrids, and humans. My counterpoint to that is Dr. Naish may be a paleontologist, but he's not a primatologist who will tell you whistles, grunts, howls, and whoops are all part of primate communication. However, in fairness, there is a diverseness to many vocalizations, some of which I am certain are misidentifications, and I truly do not consider them much other than anecdotal evidence. They will not prove a Sasquatch exists unless there's a direct or physical evidence proving that they are the ones making the sounds, tree knocks, etc. But in an investigation, these are important to make correlation amongst other investigators and researchers. The conclusion must be more research and good investigation is required. Not an assumption, because there is no more proof than Dr. Naish's conclusion than a conclusion that a Sasquatch has caused it. So that was my my point to that is, you know, it's true. We hear all kinds of howls. What's that? You know, now I have been in places where I believe I've heard a Sasquatch scream, and it is unlike anything you've ever heard, and it will make your gut vibrate. And I think, you know what, see, here's my issue with that, what Dr. Naish is saying. You know, one of my first ever Bigfoot investigations was back in 2000, where I actually had somebody reported in to me. And John Weitzel, who actually is on he's one of the voices on our monologue on the intro to this radio show. And I got to know John over many years before he passed away at a very young age of 43, which was horribly. Yeah. And he was a very athletic guy again.
Wow.
Going back to this life is short stuff.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. And he was very familiar with all the noises. Now, he grew up where he had this vocal experience, and he could see it out of the corner of his eye moving along. And he had heard nothing like it in his life, and he had lived up there all his life. And granted, he was 28, 30 years old when he had the experience. But still, you know, doesn't take away. I mean, how many times have hunters have heard something that they can't describe? And they've been in the woods months, a year. You know, so
right.
Dr. Nash, while you may sit behind a desk and feel that you're an authority on what people hear, you're a paleontologist. You spend a lot of time looking at bones, not out in the woods, you know, with a bionic ear or listening. And in fairness, you know, in fairness, I make great points, too, saying that, you know, audio evidence is not going to bring it home. So it's stuff that we as researchers need to correlate. It's great. You know, I can talk to other, you know, and the same goes with the paranormal world. There are some things that are borderline that really I don't know. But we note correlations with other investigators. That's how we start to build hypotheses. That's how we start to build tests run or techniques to use. If we just sit there, I may not put it out there for public consumption, but you know, saying, hey, this is a Bigfoot, but I'll put it out to other researchers. What do you think of this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's... A lot of people, you know, were talking earlier about him discounting the tree knocks. Well, you know, as a researcher, we have to kind of discount that, too, because we don't actually see the creatures making those. But I have done some tree knocks out there in the woods and been answered, you know, a few times. But that doesn't mean I don't go out there every night after that and bang on a tree, because that's pointless. What do you want to do? Have a conversation in Morse code with Bigfoot? You know, I don't think they're capable of that. Well, I wouldn't be capable of it either. But when you get into stuff like that, though, I mean, you do some tree knocking and you get an answer. Well, what that tells me is that's an area to come back and explore during the day. You know, that's an area to start checking out. There's some sort of activity going on there.
I have actually found a road that pops like a tree knock. And people say, oh, I hear that tree knock. No, that's the road.
Because
watch, a car will go by, and like 35 seconds later, you'll hear this pop.
Right.
And it's just, however, it's a little dip in the road that's making either the shock absorber make a noise or the road itself make a noise.
Yeah.
And it sounds incredibly like a tree knock. Now, where you get stuff that I feel a little bit valid is I was about a year ago, a little over a year and a half ago, I was out in an area, and literally the three researchers I was – the other two researchers I was walking with, they had been getting all kinds of strange activity.
Yeah.
And I said, well, come on, let's go out and take a walk, because they like – staying put and listening in the car and using audio recording, which, okay, that's their methodology. That's fine. Me, I'm more of a proactive guy. Let's get out. Let's take a look around. And we had got tree knocks within maybe 50 yards of where we were. Just a single bang. And it happened a few times, and then something pushed a tree over.
Yeah.
So something. And
oh, yeah.
And that is a primate display. Now, some people say, well, maybe it was a bear that pushed over a tree. I've talked to a lot of hunters, and never a hunter has said, I've never heard of a bear pushing over a tree unless it was an accident. And this considering it came with two tree knocks, or three tree knocks, whatever it was, followed by that tree crashing down.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, yeah, something was definitely out there. And, you know, further follow-up, and they've had this on recording, too. They have their vehicle being hit by a rock where it skidded off the ground and hit the side of the vehicle, and more tree knocks and more trees being pushed over. And this is in the middle of nowhere where there is no... You know, so, I mean,
what's
I know.
The thing,
there was
you know,
nobody
I,
around.
Yeah, I've heard trees fall before. And the whole time, I used to be an avid hunter and fisherman. I used to spend a lot of time outdoors. You know, whatever hunting season came up, you know, I was out there, man. I loved it. And, you know, that's how you spend the fall and the winter in Kentucky. You go hunting. And then, of course, you know, spring, summer, you go fishing. And then, you know, fall and winter, there you go. You're back to hunting again. And I have spent hours, man, hours in the woods, you know, a lot of times just sitting, listening, waiting, you know, waiting for some game to come popping, you know, trotting by. And I had never heard a tree fall, never heard one fall, up until the time I started investigating these creatures. And only in an area to where there was some activity going on did I get to experience the tree falling. You know, whether it was pushed over or what, but, yeah, a tree falling. And, you know, you kind of think about it. Well, if you're in the woods, okay, there's a good chance, you know, a tree's going to fall. If you're there or not, it's going to fall. Sometimes you might be out there at the time that it does fall. Well, wow, that's pretty cool. That's a coincidence. You were there to hear it. And that's something that a lot of people never hear their whole life. But to be out there in the woods in an area that has activity and has had sightings, and a tree falls, and then 15 minutes later, another one falls 100 yards away from it.
Yeah. Well,
now,
here's the other.
Two tree falls in a row, that's kind of odd.
Now, you see, this is why that whole incident, although I find it very suspect, is it Sasquatch activity. Well, we didn't spot one.
Yeah.
But here's a devil's advocate explanation of what occurred. And this is always, see, this is how I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how researchers should think, is maybe what we heard were not necessarily tree knocks, but they were,
right.
It was actually the tree popping before
right.
It fell over.
Right.
Right?
Very possible. Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't windy, but it was cold. And maybe that cold, you know, when it started to constrict, it started to pop the tree, and then it just
right.
fell over, you know.
Right.
So, you know, there's a devil's advocate explanation of it. And we should always
right.
be our own devil's advocate. And that,
right.
you know, that objectivity, I've noticed, has been lost rampant throughout
yeah.
the Bigfoot community. Is that everything
yeah.
has got to be, this structure has got to be Bigfoot, this tree bend has got to be Bigfoot, this, you know, tree bends drive me insane, because the bottom line is a Bigfoot just can't take a tree and bend it and it's going to stay that way. It doesn't
right.
work that way. You know, if a Bigfoot took a tree, bent it over, it let go, it whoomp, it go right back up. The
exactly.
Iroquois used
yeah.
to, they used to make the Native Americans used to make tree saddles, a way
mm-hmm.
Way they would mark territory. They would do a tree bend, and they literally would have
right.
to tie a tree down for a month or two before the
yeah.
bend would actually take. And
right.
You know, so a tree bend, you know, here's the greatest devil's advocate explanation, especially here in the Northeast. And in places like the Midwest, especially
right.
in the northern part of the Midwest, is that we have ice storms. And those
right.
the ice will make those trees bend, and it may be
yep.
several months before that ice melts off. Therefore,
right.
you have a tree with a tree bend in it.
Right.
Now, as far as dens and nests and stuff like that, you know, there's a lot of I've seen a coyote den. I've seen plenty of coyote dens, actually. You know, there's a lot of other creatures that could do it. If you're
yeah.
not seeing the creature doing it, it's just anecdotal. Now, I do notice some. I have noticed some tree placements in the woods.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of defy explanation, and I always kept it as a reference point. And then it was like 8 years later when another group actually found something very similar in about
right.
a mile away from where I found mine. And that
yeah.
made me go, So I have some theories and some hypotheses on there, but it's not ready
yeah.
for public consumption by any means, because it's just conjecture. I like putting out fact, And if it's, I'm unsure, I will state such. And that's the way we need to be. Not this,
yeah.
Not this picture of, you know, oh, I was just snapping pictures and look, I caught a Bigfoot, and you have this shadow
yeah.
in the, unless you
right.
saw it, you know. And there's been
right.
a case, actually, it was, I want to say it was in Chittenden, Vermont, where they had gotten this picture. It's a blob squatch, no doubt, but the person had
yeah.
seen it, you know.
Yeah.
So that to me is a little different. That which, so to me, it may look like a blob squatch, but it has some direct evidence to support that that was a creature moving in the woods.
Right.
And so that case to me is different. If you're just taking pictures and you're finding Sasquatch in every picture, please, please, you know, go to a psychologist, get a Rorschach test, let them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Said, that's a Bigfoot.
Oh,
that's a Bigfoot. That's a cow with a hat on it. You know, and stuff like that.
Oh man. But there are times though, because these things are really, really good at hiding or blending in with their surroundings. And there'll be times where if you have a sighting, you might be able to spot some movement out of the corner of your eye, then you look over direct at the direction that the movement was coming from, and now there's no movement. And you don't really see anything out of the ordinary. Now I always tell everybody, go ahead if you got a camera with you. And usually, you know, everybody's got their phone. Go ahead and make a picture of it. But make a picture of the area there and look
yep.
closely. But if you're just walking along and say, hey, man, look at that. There's some nice trees over there. I think I'm going to take a picture of those. Well, you know, no, more than likely, you're not going to get a picture of Bigfoot in those trees. So,
right.
The shadows and stuff, you know, will mess
right.
with you. But if you
right.
spot some movement, and that's the way I think, and this is just one of those other personal opinions. I think they use our discounting movement, brief movements, I think they use that to get by, to go unseen. Because once we see something move out of the corner of our eye, we'll turn and look. And if we don't see anything right away, we'll say, oh, that was nothing, and go on. And
right.
We never think, give it a second thought, you know. And that was another thing that I try to tell people. If you're in that situation, you're in an area where there's been some activity, and you see some movement out of the corner of your eye, stop and look and study that area. You know, wait, watch
yeah.
for a little while because,
yep.
your eye could have been playing tricks on you. It's very possible, but there's a chance that it wasn't. There's a chance that you did catch some movement out of the corner of your eye, and whatever moved is still there. And if you look for it, you know, you eventually might get to where it's at.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll say this, you know, and you know, you yourself had seen one and
mm-hmm.
got a small video clip of one.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got excoriated by the Skoptics. And of course, those were the days
oh,
of
yeah.
forums where people could say they believed in Bigfoot, joined a Bigfoot forum, and they're nothing but a skeptic
right.
there to troll everybody.
Yeah, right.
And that too, it was very frustrating. That was that led to forum wars, led to a lot more vitriol than anything. So yeah, there's some on, you know, there's some that's been on social media that bounces around once in a while, but it was
mm-hmm.
nothing to the level of what happened in forums, because forums
right.
would blow up, and then you would get people that were arguing between each other. You would get groups arguing between each other, and
yeah.
it would get out of hand. You know, it was. Now it's humorous. Back then it was very frustrating.
Yeah.
It was like, why do I even
yeah.
want to come here? Because you get a piece of Bigfoot evidence or something that may be evidence, and
yeah.
you know, you get the person that shoots it down right away based on what? On nothing but opinion.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
that's always been the difference. What I try to do is I don't put opinion on something out there. You can ask me my
yeah.
opinion, but publicly I'm not going to state an opinion. I'm going to try to put some
yeah.
facts together. Here's the evidence. You decide on it, you know. And
right, right.
you know, that's the way I try.
Yeah. That taught me a valuable lesson because it doesn't matter. I mean, you can tell people that you saw something. And by the way, not only did I see it, here's a photo of what I saw. And of course, you know, unless it's in high definition video and the Sasquatch leaves a DNA sample on the camera, you know, they're just going to say, oh, that's nothing. That's a shadow. You didn't see anything, you know. Or the best one, you know, oh, you're lying. You didn't see anything. Well, okay.
Yeah. Well, I had one book reviewer that mm-hmm. said that he finds my stories hard to believe. What? That I had a couple of encounters. Why are my stories so hard to believe? I mean, it is what it is. That's my story, and I've had plenty of witnesses to back that up. So, you know, it's very frustrating when you have these trolls or people that – but we're in the age where, you know, trolling is a commonality. And, you know, that's why –
Well, you know, see, though, in all fairness, you know, anything related to Bigfoot is hard to believe unless you've seen it yourself. And then,
correct.
And then you look at the evidence with a different point of view, like, you know – You know, I've seen these creatures before. I know you have too. And when we look at Bigfoot evidence, we don't look at every photo or every video and like, oh wow, it's another Bigfoot. No,
no.
What we do is we look at that photo or that video and say, well, this doesn't look like what I saw, or this doesn't act the way the creature did that when I saw it. Yeah,
it's people. People want to have – if people get evidence, they become invested in it.
Yeah.
And it's as an investigator – and see, this is why I understand their point, the way they feel.
Yeah.
But they got to understand the way I feel. It's not that – a lot of times I'm trying to be a naysayer. But
right.
I'm looking at it from the fact, from the standpoint of an investigator. And I have to look at it upside down. But people get invested in it. They come up with a piece of evidence. They want to feel that this evidence, this is it. This is what proves it. This is, well, right. But, you know, like I'll give you a great example of a blob squatch in the woods. I take her to
right.
the point. We actually take a picture of what the blob squatch was.
Right.
Oh. And she seems so disappointed. A week and a half later, she calls me and says, well, I found another one in the picture. And at that point, you got to step back. You got to step back and say no, because people get a piece of evidence and they want to feel invested
right.
in it. And I have gotten a lot, you know, I have literally, aside from the track stuff, you know, and I'll go into the New York baby video and the Vermont trail cam photo. I was not invested in that. People think that I was, but like I said, I put that whole picture out to the scientist. And I said, what the scientist comes back with, that's going to be our answer. Because we've looked at it every other angle and every other way. Now we just need to know, is this something in front of the camera or is this something away from the camera? Well, the shadow proved that it was on the ground. It was nothing flying in front of the camera or any of the such because the leading edge shadow. So,
right.
But, you know.
Well,
you still
that was the thing that got
it.
Me on the Vermont trail cam video. We looked at those pictures, and I looked at that picture on a big screen TV until my eyes hurt. And I zoomed in and we caught that one part of the picture that looks like the part of something else, you know, and which I tried to ask myself, well, if this was truly an owl, what part of the owl is that? And I couldn't come up with an answer. Now, if what I looked at was if. On the Vermont trail cam photo, if that extra part that we saw in there was part of a second smaller creature, which is what I think it was, you know, what part of that creature would it have been? Well, it was obvious to me, you know, of course now we're getting on back based on opinion again. And on the,
exactly.
The Vermont trail cam picture, you know, I'm convinced that that was a creature carrying a smaller one. And that's just, you know, if, unless it comes out tomorrow that somebody's, you know, had a suit that had those markings on there and they said, I did this.
Right.
I'm still going to be convinced it was a creature.
Right.
Of some sort.
Right.
Yeah.
And the scientist, like I said, the scientist came back and said, no, this is on the ground. Well, we've already looked at passing notions and we looked at, you know, this is a front yard, the yard is alarmed.
Right.
And it was all within 1 minute time. Nobody knew the trail camera was there. It's definitely not Frank. Frank is way too old to be doing that kind of stuff.
And I don't think Frank's big enough either.
No. True, very true. The size comparison test we did, the thing was obviously about three times my size. I mean, the width on it was tremendous. But here's the thing people forget, is that a year earlier, not one quarter of a mile away, there was a Sasquatch sighting.
Mm-hmm.
There has been sightings 3 miles away, 5 miles away, and it's only about 14 to 16 miles away from Whitehall, New York.
Right.
So it's not very far from the Bigfoot capital of New York either.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So, you
know, hot area.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a lot of, now, is that scientific? Is all the, no, my job, I am not a scientist. My job is an investigator. So I'm going to put forth the facts that that lead to a possible conclusion. And the court is the one who decides, and in this case it's the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good mix on the Vermont trail cam photo. So I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But I've done my job. You know, I've done my job.
Yeah.
Whether you want to believe it or not, I've done my job. I may believe it, you may believe it. Another way, so be it. But the bottom line is that I've done my job. There's your weather data. There's the camera make and model. There's the summation by Dr. Maccabee. There, you know, when I do my lectures, and I don't know if I didn't do the Vermont trail cam photo when you were there, Chris.
No, that's what I wish you would have added that. That was I was kind of hoping to see that one on there.
Well, next time. Next time.
Next time. Okay.
But when I do the Vermont trail cam photo, when I do my lectures, I actually take my hand and put it in front of the projector, and I go halfway and put it in front of the projector, and then I walk my hand to the thing, and that's how people understand what Dr. Maccabee was saying, and that it's physically impossible for it to be in front of the camera without casting shadow.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't work. That's physics. So, the scientist said it. If you don't want to believe the scientist, just come to one of my lectures and look at the test and try to fool it.
Yeah.
Try to fool
it. That was the thing, you know, and everybody can form their own opinion about it. And that's right.
Yeah.
You know, that's good. But I based my opinion on, you know, what I, my study of it and also, Dr. Fehrenbach's study of the photo and his findings.
Actually, it was Dr. Maccabee.
Oh, Maccabee? I thought it was Fehrenbach.
Yeah,
my bad. Sorry, Bruce. But anyway, after I did the detailed study on it, man, I just came to the conclusion, man, this is it. This is the deal. And not all Bigfoot evidence is like that. A lot of times I look at other evidence and I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous, a ridiculous fake, you know.
And there's always a big rush by some people to get that evidence right out there. And that's what causes a lot of big mistakes, you know, and big disappointments, you know. Because if you rush it and you're wrong, not only are so you made a mistake, big deal. We're all human. We make errors. But if you put it out there too premature, you're going to disappoint a lot of people too. So there's an obligation to be honest with yourself, honest with the people that presented you that evidence, and honest with the public if you're going to publicly present that.
Right.
I have, like I say, it's never been about skin in the game. Oh, Bigfoot's real. I'm out to prove Bigfoot's real. No, I'm out
right.
on a case-by-case basis to gather information and present it in a way that an investigator would. Not a scientist, an investigator. As an investigator,
yeah.
my job is to present evidence, to give the evidence to the prosecutor, a.k.a. the scientist, and you do what it,
yeah.
you know, you do it well, or I'm going to
yeah.
put it out there and let the court of public opinion just digest it. That's all. But I'm going to do
yeah.
it in a way that's honest. I'm going to do it in a way that's fair. And I'm going to do it in a way that's real, not in fantasy land.
Yeah.
And not jump from conclusion A to conclusion D, which a lot of people
right.
do. Bioluminescence is one of them. You know, people
right.
say, oh, I think Sasquatch eyes can bioluminesce. Okay. That would be something if primates could bioluminesce, but they can't. That
yeah.
would be something
right.
if mammals could bioluminesce, but they can't. So what makes
right.
you think that a Sasquatch can? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You
and
know,
most
you
of the eye shine
go-
cases that, yeah, Steve, when we're talking about eye shine, you know, I've really been looking at that for several years now. And most every case, there was always a secondary source of lighting. I mean, in each case,
yep.
the eye shine occurred at night. But even if there wasn't a flashlight shining in that area, there was a moon that night, you know, and there's some sort of secondary lighting for to reflect off the creature's eyes to give
right.
that eye shine.
And the bigger the eyes, the bigger the shine. So it could give the effect.
Right.
of bioluminescence,
yeah.
but it's really...
Right.
But anyway, you know, like I was saying, I had the Vermont Trail Cam photo. I think I had it for like 3 or 4 months before we
yeah.
actually put it out there, because that's what it
yeah.
takes. When you have something that potentially has the wow factor, like the Vermont Trail, you have to do your homework, and you can't rush
yeah.
to put it out there. As much as I would have loved to go, hey, look what we got. I would be doing it no service because there's no way to defend it one way or the other. The
yeah.
same thing with the New York baby video. I remember getting that VHS tape, and then I actually converted it to DVD. I took it.
Right.
That was back in the day, back in 2003, when you literally had to take VHS tapes to, you know, professionals to transfer that.
Yeah.
I had it
yeah.
transferred.
Yeah.
And then eventually I digitalized it and got it on the computer.
Right.
And people do not understand that every video you see on the internet of the New York baby video comes from the VHS tape I have in my possession.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of cool because it's been viewed a lot of times. And,
yeah.
and that video came off of the VHS tape that I have, because
yeah.
I transferred the video. I sent it out to a few folks. One of the first people I sent it out was to Rick Knoll, who used to be a Bigfoot
yeah.
researcher. He did a lot of video work. I did a lot of work for the BFRO back in the day. And
yeah.
eventually, you know, all these little copies and these variations, and people have taken the digital copies and have altered it and, you know, put their own little markings on it or whatever. But that all derives
yeah.
from the one videotape that I have, because I was the only person that Doug Pridgen ever sent a videotape to.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. But people don't understand that when I looked at that, and once I got it digitalized, I was able to look at that thing frame by frame by frame. Again, this was a 4 or 5 month process. And,
right.
You know, it was just an incredible piece of footage that, you know, people can say, well, maybe it's a monkey in a tree, but we've already, you know, that's the only other thing. We know what's in that tree is not human. So,
right.
kind of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's
a lot of, matter of fact, they did an episode of Finding Bigfoot on the New York baby footage, I think, didn't they? See?
They sure did. Yep. And they did on the Vermont
yeah.
Trail photo as well. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, it was kind of cool because Renee Holland and I got in a conversation. Of course, she was the skeptic on the team, and Think of what you may. But Renee is a real scientist. She's really intelligent. In fact, her and my son got into a big conversation because my son, you know, obviously is fish and wildlife management. He's got his bachelor's in that. So they had a long discussion on stuff like that because he, I believe, is a biologist. And so she knows her. She is great. But she looked at that and she says, you know, this is probably the best trail cam photo I've seen, which kind of floored me, I felt like, I was pretty shocked by it too.
Yeah.
You know, so, it takes time. And you know, it's kind of funny how we roll these shows about different things. We never know how these shows are going to roll out. This is not a scripted show, folks. This is not a planned out show. This is discussion. This is like having a fireside chat with a couple of Bigfoot researchers is what we're having tonight. and this is what we at the top, we're just going to roll with the show, and we wanted to talk about this, and it always lead into another, and we never knew where we're really going to go. A lot of times when we have guests on, we are the same way. We say we're going to ask our same staple questions that we ask every week, but we never know where a show is going to go, and that's the fun thing about doing this show, is you never know where it's going to go, you know, today. And I'm really big on evidence, and I'm also big on if you don't know, ask. I'll talk about, missteps. You're always going to make when you're new to Bigfoot research, even when you're old to Bigfoot research, you can always make a misstep. Case in point, 2003, I take a reporter with me from the Times Union, the Albany Times Union. They're doing an article on me, and we go all the way out to the Adirondacks. I was going to take her to the John Weitzel location just to walk around there and see if we can find anything, which is, you know, like a needle in a haystack there. But just a week previously, I had gotten a Sasquatch report, and that was actually aired at my Monster Quest about the two boys in the railroad. I'm not going to get into that story completely, but if you're ever interested in Monster Quest 2008, Bigfoot in New York, they have that story with the kids on the railroad tracks. Well, on that show, they show this wonderful print that's on the ground that I had found. The reporter had found the downed tree. Something had actually broke off a tree, a 4 foot, 5 foot fir tree. Had about a 4-inch diameter on the trunk, and something just pulled it down almost at the base of it. That's how strong the snap was. And then about 6 feet, 10 feet away from that, there was this depression in the leaves. Peel the leaves back, and there's the print.
Yeah.
Guess who didn't have any casting material with him? This guy. This guy.
Oh man.
So.
Yeah.
There I am. Well, you know, I'm 4 years into this, 5 years into this, and I'm still making a rookie mistake by not bringing casting material with me. I'm just going up here sniffing, and there it is. So at least I got the photographic evidence. The rookie didn't forget his tape measure. I did have a tape measure there, so that was a good thing.
Yeah.
And for anybody that's really interested, I use for any photographic evidence. And as I became a private investigator, one of the little nifty tools I use for photo references is something called the Keeson rod, KESON. And that's a great – you want to open that sucker up, put it next to a print. It's got the big, very big, bold things it's made to take photographs with for scale. So it's a great little tool. They're $15, $20. They're like a little tape measure. But the neat thing is you can pull the whole thing out, and it's like 6 foot 6 tall when you pull it out of the holder. And you can actually stand it up something next to a tree or something like that. And if you peruse SquatchDetective.com, you can see examples of the Keeson rod. But great tool to have. It's a must-have for investigators. Must-have. So I can't.
It's good to have a stick with you, too. It's good to have a walking stick, especially if you're an older fellow like me. Those actually make really good tools for tracking too, though.
And you can also, and you know, if you have the pillow with the tie-ons, They're wonderful too. You can tie them to behind in case you fall, in case you want to sit down and want to get your butt cold and get the piles.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right,
but yeah, there's a great tool to have out in the woods. And these are the basics. I mean, have yourself a lighter. Always have a source of fire. Have yourself a tape measure. Have yourself, at least have the plaster of Paris, and don't forget the water in the car.
Yeah.
Because sometimes
you're
not always near a stream. So, oh, I got my plaster.
Well,
you
see, that's
water.
The thing, though, Steve. You know, when I started out, right, yeah, I would take plaster with me, which I would put in a 1 gallon Ziploc baggie, and I would take me two or three bottles of water. Well, you know, the bottle of water, you know, it's got more uses. You know, if you're out, you want to drink, okay, you can drink a bottle of water. But you also pour some bottled water in the Ziploc baggie and then reseal it and mix up your plaster casting material, which in my case I like dental stone. And then you tear a corner of the little plastic baggie and let that mixture kind of ooze into the track. And, man, it's so handy. You know, whoever invented Ziploc bags, you know, hats off.
Right. But, and then you have the really, really resourceful researchers. Just never trust the yellow cast. Think about it. They forget their water, and what do they have left?
Oh, yeah. Right, exactly. Never touch the yellow cast either.
Never touch it either. But
you know, when I first started going out for the first couple of years there, I took a backpack with me. Of course, now this is in a known area where I'm used to. Okay, if a tree is out of place, I would remember it. Okay, I was that used to this area, so I got to where I was leaving the backpack at the vehicle because it's just extra weight to be carrying. And I did run up on several tracks and trackways, which I managed to follow several of them. But I never did make a cast of those while I was doing it. I wish I had of. There were several good prints I could have gotten, and there were several small prints that I would like to have had a cast of now when I look back on it. But I would say, even though it is heavier, I would recommend everybody go ahead, take your backpack with you, keep your casting material with you and some bottle of water, because you never know, you know, even if you see a trackway and, you know, you don't know whether you should cast that one or not, go ahead, cast it. Go ahead, because you'll regret it later.
Oh, absolutely. It's good practice anyway. It's good practice.
Yeah.
It's good to practice with it. It's good to, you know, check your times with it. When's it curable? It's good to learn how to pry them out. One of the best casting materials I ever worked with was I worked with dental stone for the first time recently.
Yes.
And I love that stuff. I got to get some more.
Oh, yeah.
That is
it's
cool
good
stuff.
I think I got the last batch I bought came from eBay, Steve. I don't remember what seller, but it was eBay dental stone. And it was very reasonable. They had like a standard shipping cost, and what they would do is ship you that in a USPS flat rate box.
Gotcha.
And of course, you know, I think, God, it's like 20 pounds worth or something. But the shipping was really reasonable at that time. I think it was like 11 or 12 bucks.
Meanwhile, your postman is swearing at you. But those are just like the basics. I mean, nobody says you have to run out with night vision. Nobody says you have to run out with thermals. I mean, they're cool to have.
Right.
I have them. They're cool to have. But the fun stuff is, you know, you can have a good thermal. You can have a good night vision. It's not going to prove it, but at least, you know, you get to take home some evidence. Having a camera, make sure nowadays. See, back in the day when I started this, cameras weren't on phones. So you had to bring in a camera, and you had to bring in a camcorder if you wanted a video.
Right.
Now you can do everything on your phone and in HD, no less. I don't need a camcorder.
Yeah, and
I have
also, my phone's got a dang compass on it.
Oh, yeah.
My phone has a compass. You know, I couldn't believe it.
Well, here's a cool little, here's another little tech tip from the Squad Detective, is that there is an app for Android and for the iPhones that can put a timestamp, and you can actually geolocate as well. So if you take a picture, it'll tell you where you're taking the picture of, time, seconds, date, all that wonderful stuff, and it'll timestamp it. So you instead of opening up the regular camera, you open up the timestamp camera. Completely free app, and it works wonderfully. And guess what? We use it in private investigation. We use it in other investigations all the time.
Right.
In fact, the cool thing about that is you never have to worry about the time being right or the date being right, because it's all done via the cell towers. So, you know, it reads the time from the cell tower or whatever. Even if you're in an area that doesn't have cell coverage, it'll remember the time it last took it and keep it. So it's always on Johnny on the spot with that stuff. So
cool.
I might have to find that.
Again, it's timestamp camera free, and it's free.
Yeah. Because I was carrying the good old Sony Handycam, which was actually, you know, it's a small camera, but it is a small camcorder, and it is a little aggravating. But, you know, I would carry that thing in a tripod with me because I was, you know, getting prepared for the next time I have a good golden opportunity to collect video of one of these things. I was going to have a good, clear HD video that was not shaking and moving around. And unfortunately, you know, we haven't had that sort of opportunity, but hey, that's part of it, man. Just I'm going to try to get back out there. That's the thing. Never give up. I think I may end up using my phone this time. Steve, you with me?
Yes. I actually was muted for a second. I didn't realize I was muted. But it's nice to pass off some of these tech tips out to folks.
Yeah.
Those are just the basics. You know, you got an Android phone, you're good to go with photography.
Yeah.
Have a you know, now for $250, you can throw a not a FLIR, but you can throw a Seek thermal on your phone, and you can have thermal imagery off the phone. I mean, there's just so
much.
That's
the thing. I want to ask you, Steve, on those thermal things that you could add onto your phone. They would also work good for like daytime use, wouldn't they? I mean, not only
absolutely.
Just night.
Yeah.
But,
absolutely.
Okay. Because it reads the heat from the whatever you're photographing, rather than.
Right. So if you want to get into a little pricier, you know, there's pricier ones, but the Seek thermal, which just plugs into your Android phone. Now you got to be careful because they have changed the ports in some of the phones now. So my new phone has that. I believe it's called a C-type. Port, so it doesn't work with the Seek thermal. However, when you go to upgrade your phone, don't get rid of your old phone. Keep it. I have a Note 5, which has the USB-C port and or the US the micro USB port, and that's what I use for my. And guess what? I that automatically puts the time and date on the stuff. And again, the time and date still, even though the phone is not active, it still reads the time from the towers. So the time is always accurate. The cool thing about what I like with the Seek thermal is if you're in video mode, okay, so you take a FLIR out, one of the handheld ones, and you take, and even though they're great and crisp, they're about $1,700, and you're taking that video. What don't you have on that video? Audio.
Right.
Well, the beautiful thing about the Seek thermal is as you're taking the thermal, it's also recording the audio. So it's no different. So you have an audio of it. So you can sit there and narrate, okay, something is walking to the left, to the right, there it is. You know, I'm going to try to move in on it, whatever you want to do. So you can narrate that audio as a video as it's happening. Unlike a FLIR.
What kind
where
of range?
Kind of
Yeah, Steve, do you know what kind of range that thing has by
any
chance?
It's got a, maybe about 150 feet really sharp.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean,
well, that might
know,
work
that,
out. That might work out about right. Yeah.
You don't need hundreds
this,
of yards because even
right,
if you had a
right
field with something that's 100 yards away, you're just going to get a blip on the
yeah
screen, right?
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and
see, that,
the cool
that,
thing
that,
is
that may come in handy. I may have to get one of those because I've been thinking about doing a true Kentucky expedition here, and instead
right
of using walking over the land. I'm going to use the Green River and float
gotcha
down the center of the Green River with no, you know, just at the speed of the current with no engine going in the boat and do thermal coverage of both sides of the riverbank.
That makes a lot of sense. But here's the other cool thing about that, too, is
mm-hmm
if you want to zoom in, you
yeah
just zoom it in like you would your camera phone.
Oh,
so
cool.
You just, so you can zoom in, too.
Wow.
So
it's okay.
It's kind of like a tie-in between the camera phone and a thermal imager, which is, you know, kind of a neat thing. Not the greatest.
Right.
Is it going to prove anything? No. But it's going to give you, it's a tool. Just like,
right.
And then the other thing, too, is invest in a good audio recorder. I use an H2N, Zoom H2N.
Yeah.
Great recorder. Great recorder, and if you're a ghost hunter out there listening to this show, the H2N is also great for doing burst sessions on EVP, burst EVP sessions, where you can record
yeah
for a little bit and play it right back. It's really cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Oh,
man.
But, well, guess what time it is, Chris?
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, wow.
Yeah, we...
I got... yeah, we're almost... We're at the end of the show. Oh,
quick show. Quick show.
Well, yes.
And it's always been fun.
Well,
talking
to Bigfoot. The clock moves faster when my mouth is moving, it seems like. I don't pay as much attention to it.
Usually I don't pay much attention to my mouth when I got food in it. I just keep shoveling it in. But so anyway, folks, it's that time where we're going to sign off. Chris, any last words?
No, just everybody, thanks for joining us, and be safe out there.
Awesome sauce. So, okay, so on behalf of all of us here at Squatch Detective Radio, we want to wish everybody a happy and safe week. Of course, keep healthy. God bless. And we'll see you next week here, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or actually we're on Eastern Daylight Time, here on Blog Talk Radio, exclusively live on Blog Talk Radio. Catch us on iTunes. Catch us on the Google Play Store. Catch us on iHeartRadio. Catch us on TuneIn Radio. And catch us on Stitcher. We're all there. So anyway, folks, have a great week. God bless. We'll catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to Squatch Detective Radio. Join us each week on Blog Talk Radio, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern, as your hosts, veteran Bigfoot researchers Steve Culls and Chris Bennett, bring you guests from around North America, exploring the mystery of the beast known as Bigfoot.